It's time for Mac Break Weekly. It's that special time just a week or two before a Big Apple announcement where all we can do is sit here and wonder, speculate. We'll talk about the two iPhone sizes. What will the screen resolution look like? And which camera phone is the best? It's coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 417, recorded August 26th, 2014. Lego Queen. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda is an easy and affordable way to help you learn instantly. Stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. And by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering a code MacBreak when you check out. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom, not a law firm. LegalZoom provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest. I don't know why I begin with such a bang. I should just go slow.
It gives us a lot of energy.
You got a long way to go before September 9th.
You got to be your own warm-up guy. You know,
ladies and gentlemen.
Crowd, throwing them candy into the audience.
Boys and girls, get the T-shirt cannon out. It's time for Mac Break Weekly. That's Andy Inaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Leo. Lovely shirt today.
Thank you. Lisa bought it for me in Hawaii. It's a Tommy Bahama you can only get in islands. Yeah, I know you're a big fan of the black Tommy Bahama. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Alex Lindsay. I
love Tommy Bahama. I have lots of different colors, but I don't have that one.
You're the one who took me to the Tommy Bahama store in San Francisco at Nordstrom Center.
Because we needed some, we were short shorts.
And I bought a bunch of black shirts.
Yes.
Thank you.
The blue one is very nice because you can change the color in post. Put the blue over the green screen and then you can key it and then change it.
So you've moved to Pittsburgh.
I have over the weekend, Mike. Well, I'm over the weekend back here. Yeah, over the weekend I moved to Pittsburgh. The kids start school on Wednesday, so I had to get them there.
Yeah.
So then to come back and finish up the packing and then go back again this weekend. Well, unless I go to Italy tomorrow. Next week. So
I always like to say that. Unless I go to Italy tomorrow. That could be any day.
Next week.
I might go to Italy tomorrow. I feel like I should. I'd like Wednesday. Either Italy or Montreal. That's where Renee Ritchie is of iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
Leo, I woke up to word that Burger King was buying Tim Hortons and moving the whole shebang to Canada. I just don't know what to do with myself.
I call shenanigans. It was a huge amount of money. It was billions and billions. It dwarfs the acquisition of Twitch by Amazon. It's like 11 billion.
I don't. I'm really
a donut shop.
I like Tony Horton so much, and
Tony.
I don't like.
Oh
Burger
yeah, he
King
loves
so
Tony
much.
Horton. His favorite hockey player.
Yes,
donut
Tony Horton.
Whoppers are going to be a thing.
Tony Horton.
So the thing is Tony Horton,
Tim,
and Tim Horton
are
Tim
they
Horton
brothers.
Takes your belly and pushes it one way.
Yeah,
and I believe Tony Horton pulls it back in. I try to stick with
$11.4 billion. It is a sacrilege. It's something akin to Budweiser buying Molson's.
It's good for neither of our countries, Leo.
What's weird is that they're moving Burger King to Canada.
We already have a queen. We're okay. We're good.
A king and a queen now.
Look forward to seeing more drunken people at hockey fights wearing those paper free crowns. That's a good visual. Free advertising,
poor
man.
Jim Dalrymple's not even here and he's being made fun of.
Remember Scott Bourne gave us that gold card at Burger King?
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll work at Tim Hortons.
Unlimited Burger King. I guess it's all over for Scott and his unlimited Burger King card. Doesn't he have a card that he can eat free forever?
Something like that. That was the story anyway.
I don't buy it.
I think it was just a good story.
So apparently this is when it came across the wire, they said it was a tax inversion.
Yep.
That's painful.
The hell is that?
Paying tax in Canadian dollars must be cheaper.
Yeah.
It is. That's language they use in the first reel of a sci-fi horror movie to explain the thing they can't explain that caused the giant monster to visit upon this. It was a tax inversion. We thought it was impossible in this dimension, but look at what's happening right now.
I think that's what caused Sharknado is a tax inversion, wasn't it?
Very much alive, yeah.
Several inversion, according to
Canadian beaches first. Canadian beaches pretending to be U.S. beaches.
Several inversion deals have developed this year alone. U.S.-based AbbVie bought Irish drug maker Shire, and then they moved to Ireland, right? The idea is you move out of the U.S. because the corporate taxes are so high here. I think we're pretty generous in our corporate tax structure.
Oh, no.
You say no?
No, it's fine.
It's fine. Canadian corporate taxes, like the Canadian civil taxes, are redonkulous.
Yep. I think the United States is pretty close to the highest corporate taxes in the world.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. That's why everyone's doing this. That's why it becomes big business.
It must be. I mean, that's proof is in the pudding. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So you should go to Saskatchewan instead of Pennsylvania, Alex.
I don't have any family in Saskatchewan. I'm not moving to Pennsylvania for a tax inversion.
Isn't Canada like kind of practically a socialist nation with things like universal health care? How could the taxes be lower in Canada?
I think
none of this makes sense to me.
I think it's higher for individuals, though, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. Huh. So that makes them a capitalist communist country.
It makes us very cold in winter and very happy in summer.
Now, I should point out that Tim Hortons, I don't know why we're going on and on about this, but Tim Hortons was owned by Wendy's.
And theoretically, and I'll argue that they use Max.
That's why we're talking about it.
They have an app.
They were in Delaware until 2009, and then they moved back to Canada shortly after the conservative government, thank you, Mr. Harper.
We were repatriated.
Lowered the corporate tax rate. The new company will be based in Canada. It'll be called Burger Hortons.
There must be a lot of tax on burgers.
I think there are going to be a lot of people who are going to whimsically drop the last syllable off of that. Hey, man, want to get dinner, burger whore?
Talk about your Whopper.
I don't know. We should restart the show, I think. Let's call this the pre-show.
I am just pissed off. I'm waiting for the gosh darn iPhone. Now, my daughter has broken her phone. My son has broken his phone. When is Apple going to release that dang thing?
Can I give you an example of how bad the news cycle has been this week?
Yes.
You know, The Verge?
I've heard of them.
Okay. Normally on their front page, they have tiles that show how many stories are kind of in the news.
Yeah. That shows you the grasp.
There's like seven of them normally.
Yeah.
There's three. Three tiles. And on top of that, the tiles are kind of funny with The Verge, Back to School Guide 2014.
Dear.
The rise and fall of virtual reality.
There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, there's very little.
And there's Oculus Rift helps man with 2D vision see 3D. That sounds like a made-up story.
This is their video pane. So anything below this bar is all
it's
video. And that's not their headline carousel. There's only three stories in the carousel.
Wow. Okay.
That's going to change. At least they're having some pity about the last week before Labor Day.
Right.
I'm gonna get in one beach day tomorrow because September is going to be all travel for me, and I've already got marked off of my calendar. Okay, iPhone announcement, Motorola announcement, Samsung definite announcement. There's a Dell. It's like, oh, man.
Well, I never thought I'd say it, but thank goodness for the Ice Bucket Challenge because that's really given us stuff.
endless
stuff to talk about. So September 9th, we still on track?
Sounds like.
Seems to be.
Looks like there's two, 4.7 and a 5.5.
128 gigabit.
I'm going to get a 4.7 for the kids and a 5.5 for myself.
128 gigabit.
Daddy.
Gigabytes.
Daddy. I don't need 128 gigabytes. The kids do because they put all their music on it.
Yeah.
So the kids is going to, I think 64.
Do they still have local music, Leo, or do they stream now, the kids?
You know, I was surprised because they have Henry has Spotify. Abby, I can't remember what she uses, but she puts music. I'll give you an example. Her MacBook Pro was 4 years old. So she went, she goes off to school last week. I buy her a new MacBook Pro and she says, can you move my music over? There's several gigabytes of music. So I guess she still has music on her. That's the age gulf between a 20 and a 22-year-old right there. Generation gap. She still has physical or bits. I'm sorry, physical.
Back in my day.
When she was little, she used to burn CDs. I had a stack of, you know, burned CDs with handwritten stuff. Not anymore.
No.
Now it's all on the hard drive. It's time for the back-to-school guide here at...
I understand there's a trapper keeper that has a built-in calculator with square root, mind
Ooh.
You.
Ooh.
That's, Alex mentioned the 128 gig idea of a phone. I'm curious to see if Apple changes their online backup, their iCloud backup offerings, because as it is, they're really not giving me enough storage just to, you know, back up my simple little phones as it is. And it's become sort of an annoying thing of always having to dismiss this. I know, like, it has been backed up for a while. It's because I don't have enough storage. And fine. I have to dig in and turn off those settings. If they actually increase to a 128 gig maximum, are they going to have, they really should have like a, they should be able to sell you a package that will just simply tell you, if you press this button for $4.99 a month or for $2.99 a month, we will give you enough storage. You can do a complete backup of this phone wirelessly and not even worry about it.
I don't understand why we don't. I really don't understand why Apple doesn't give us the option to, you know, make it as big as we want, or at least up to 1 terabyte or 2 terabytes.
What? Two terabytes, I think, with iOS 8.
Right.
But how would you put that much memory in the phone?
No. But I have a bunch of devices. It's backing up a whole bunch of different iPhones and iPads, and, like, you know, there's a lot of different backups going on. So that's the issue.
Ah.
My problem is I put on iOS 8 beta and I switched to test out all the new stuff, and now I can no longer back up my stuff. I had just enough room previously, but now I don't have room anymore because I'm using the iCloud drive, but you can't buy the new room yet. So I'm caught in this weird dimension.
Just don't have anything really unique happen in your life for the next week and a half or 2 weeks that would require it to be backed up before you lose your phone. That's all.
Well, it's camera roll stuff. It's like, I think it's 32 gigabytes of camera roll that I don't want to locally remove like an animal, but I want to. I don't want to lose anything. And
That's the problem.
My photo album library will fix that eventually, but it's not here yet.
Maybe we're losing a little something. I have that problem myself too. I was working with my iPhone 5S last week and realized that I wanted to capture, so get some pictures off the camera roll and put them in an aperture or whatever. And that's when I realized that, wow, because Apple makes it so easy to transfer all of your stuff from one to another every time you move to a new phone, I truly have photos that go back to 2011, 2012. And I'm talking about thousands and thousands of photos, including ones that I absolutely don't need anymore. And maybe the next really great step for Apple to do is not to make sure that all this stuff gets backed up and restored to every single phone you use, but to make it very, very easy to triage the phones, the pictures that you have, and kind of guess that. I think that we're backing up everything. We're backing up Andy's phone completely to iCloud. I'm guessing that we don't need to have all thousands of these photos. We're going to figure out which 130, which 140 he's actually going to be interested in and keeps looking at. And if he asks for the others, we'll make it very, very easy to transparently put those back on the phone, because now I really do have to go and weed in and make sure that I'm not deleting stuff that has been backed up at least twice elsewhere, and also making sure that I've got things organized into albums, which is still the biggest pain in the butt imaginable.
They are sort of doing that. I mean, Apple's going big into nearline storage with iCloud Photo Library. And that basically means the photos that you access the most recently, that you favorite, or that you look at the most or take the most recently, will get stored on your device. And they'll have a certain amount that they'll store on the device. And the photos that are older or that you haven't looked at in a long time, or that they think you just don't care about as much, will be kept on Apple servers. And you'll have the option of only downloading device-specific sizes for those photos to save even more space. Because I think universally, photos are taking up just tons and tons of space on iOS devices.
Not only that, but photos are taking up, I'm guessing, at least 40% of people's idea of why they have this phone and what they use it for. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's any accident that Apple's doing a complete floor-to-ceiling revamp of how their entire attitude towards photos cross-platform, because they know that this is a device that captures photos and is used to, you know, share photos with people in the analog way of saying, hey, Nana, did you see this?
Well, statistically, statistically,
you said it right,
and then I went back to do it again.
Don't go back.
It is the number one use for your phone.
Statistically?
Photos.
Really?
Yeah, no, they pulled all those. There's search it on, you know, Google it. It's on a couple different polls have shown that the number one thing people do with their phone is take a picture, you know, with their smartphone.
I agree. I think that's probably
number one thing I do. I definitely do it a lot more than talking on talking about
my
it.
Number one thing is staring at Twitter.
Well, what's funny is they have battery shaming now on iOS 8, so you can go and see what apps use the most battery. But it's not well explained yet. For example, you can see a phone low signal or some app, and it's because there's a low signal. It's ramping up the radio to try to get it, and that's understandable. But if it says Tweetbot or Twitterific is using excessive power, that might just be because you never put Twitter away. It's not right. Because it's being wasteful of energy. It's because, and it'd be nice if they made that apparent, because Paul Haddad from Tapbots, who makes Tweetbot, is already prepping himself for a deluge of tech support when that goes live, just because it's featured up there so much.
Are you sure statistically camera? I mean, I'm sure it's top five. What about text messaging, phone calls, email, social networks?
Well, it's not measuring what people are actually doing. It's asking, what do you do with your phone? Number one answer.
Take pictures.
So the Family Feud version of this.
Because you're not going to say make phone calls or text, because that's what you do with your phone, right. And that's obvious.
Right. The Family Feud version of this is right. Photos, number one answer.
Number one, survey says,
the line pictures. I heard from Apple is that they want to make photos sort of like the part of the core OS experience, that they believe they're important enough to everybody that it should be taken care of in a system level. You should never have to worry about it. And that's also why they're bringing photos to Mac. And, you know, they're not abandoning Aperture or iPhoto yet. Those are still going to be in the Mac App Store. They'll be pulled after photos from Mac launches. And they'll have ways to migrate everything, including your edits and, you know, your captions and all that kind of stuff from Aperture to Photos. But once that's launched, they really want it to be totally seamless from iOS device to Mac. Yeah. And photos will just be taken care of.
Steve C. and Mikey R. in our chat room both point out that Snapchat would be considered photos. That's certainly a big social. Instagram is photos, and that's big social. Is the iPhone still the best camera out there? Don't some of the Nokia phones have
for photos? Better? I think that say, well, Andy might.
Well, my opinion is that it's a dead heat between a Nokia PureView camera and the iPhone 5S, because they're just they're just really, really good at two different things. iPhone 5S still has the best. You see this button, push it, and it will take a really good picture. That's the best solution of any phone that's out there. The Nokia with PureView, the 1020 that I still have, actually I wound up buying it because it was just such a good thing to have in my pocket, has the advantage that it's the only phone that's a real phone that breaks through the limitations of phone photography. There's with the 5S, it's still a binary state of either it's capable of taking a picture in this situation or it is not capable of taking a picture in this situation. Like in low light, this is one of the Achilles heels of the iPhone, I think, because it goes into this weird separate mode where it just boosts up the power to the sensor and introduces all kinds of noise. So it'll take a decent photo, but very muddy and not very clear, whereas the Nokia has optical stabilization, which is something that I really think the iPhone needs to have. It also has a flash. It has a more detailed sensor that it uses an actual zoom. It's a digital zoom, but this kind of thing where you can create an 8x10 print that you digitally zoom that looks like it was the native resolution. All these other things where you can definitely come away with any scenario with a beautiful picture of your kid running around the room, not blurred out like hell, in a darkened room where it's not completely full of noise, where you didn't have to like get within 3 inches of the person in order to get their picture. So that's why I think it shares that stage with the Nokia.
And remember, we're not in most cases blowing these pictures up to big sizes. Yeah. So good enough is good enough.
Although I think that the issue that you get into is definitely for Instagram and everything else, it doesn't make any difference. I think that I do consider, like, when my kids are graduating something or competing something,
bring
a real camera. But if my lens was just a little bit better, I might be.
We're close.
Yeah, I mean, it was just. I mean,
and it's not the megapixels sensor, because.
Nope. It's I mean, you sensor
can,
size.
It is fine.
Yeah.
But that is something worth considering. You do have this phone in your pocket, and that's going to be the camera that you're going to take so many great pictures of your kids growing up and the moments of your life with. You would much. It's when I reviewed the HTC One, and it has that 4 megapixel, but bigger pixels, so better pictures sort of camera. That's what I really dinged it for. That maybe there's going to be a time 10 years from now where you wish you did not have this crummy Instagram resolution copy of this picture.
Too late.
And it's the same reason why I dinged Apple for not refusing to, for saying that we could do video in this version of the iPhone, but it would only be 15 frame per second video. That's not good enough. We are serving you by saying no, which is what we do very well. And I'm sure that 20 years from now, people are not going to write a thank you letter to Apple saying, you know, I don't have any video of my now 24-year-old kid's first step because I was there and I had the phone there. Thank you, because I realize now that if I had 15 frame per second video of this once in a lifetime moment, I would just be kicking. I would be ashamed to show it to anybody. So thank you for not putting that feature in. So that's why I think that you shouldn't settle for a camera phone that has poor performance, because that might bite you in the butt 10 or 20 years from now. And you should really think about that sort of stuff.
I'm doing an experiment right now, my children, much like Facebook did an experiment on us a few months ago without telling us. Both of them have broken their iPhones, right? Mm-hmm. So they both are currently used. Because I'm not going to buy them a new iPhone now. That'd be crazy talk.
Yes.
Yep. although you can get a pretty good deal at Walmart, apparently. We'll talk about that in a second. So I gave them both Moto X's because I had two Moto X's and I'm not using them anymore. And we'll see, because, you know, the one thing Henry wanted, and he wanted the new iPhone because he wanted slow-mo.
Right.
And the Moto X camera, by the way, crap.
Yes, absolute crap.
Crap. So if they say to me, oh, yeah, so far nobody has, the pictures are terrible. But I don't think they even notice because they're Snapchatting and Instagramming. Maybe in 5 years they'll be mad at me.
They're selfie fine.
Yeah. But I also look back at old pictures I've taken with my first digital camera.
Right.
And they don't look good either. Those were 3 and 4 megapixels. But I have them.
Right.
And they're okay. Remember, I mean.
Well, and I think that's one of the most important, you know, things about all of this is the fact that we have everything is so well documented now. I mean, I use my camera half the time just to remember something. Like someone hands me a business card, I immediately set it down, take a picture of it. I don't care about the paper. You know, I just need to get that.
It has to be good enough to do that.
Yeah, it has to be good enough to do that. I mean, well, the thing is that for me, I guess the thing I'm constantly frustrated with is low light performance is the number one thing. I really like, you know, I have an HTC, the M8. If I'm taking pictures at parties, I almost always have that with me because I like the little soft depth of field. I like being able to adjust that. And
that's cool.
When I'm posting it, it's just like it's just, and I know that if I don't take it with that camera, it's going to be really a pain to get that effect back. And I really like that effect. And so that kind of stuff is worth it.
Is this an opportunity for Apple to really upgrade the camera in the iPhone 6 and just really knock us all on our asses?
I'd be very surprised if they do anything other than incremental. I think it's an opportunity for Android makers to really HTC may not have hit it all the way out of the park, but continue to really do outrageous things. I mean, it got me to go buy an Android phone was a camera that did something other than, you know, just what every other camera did.
Yeah. Well, Apple has been hiring Lumia engineers. And so right now, Nokia and Lumia do great capture level photography. Apple does great on-device processing level photography. And Google does great server-side photo processing with their Auto Awesome and things. And no one's really crossed over those boundaries yet. But Apple has been hiring those Lumia engineers. There are rumors that they're actually going to increase the Z index so the camera comes a little bit out from the casing, which they've been reticent to do. But, you know, cameras want depth, and Apple wants to make thinner phones, and those two things have constant tension.
Oh, good point.
So it'll be interesting to see what they're going to pull this time.
Yeah, Apple's go-to solution is always to, what can we, normally to get this type of image quality, you would have to have the lens bump out a little bit. You would have to have optical stabilization, magnetically stabilized optical stabilizing lenses. We're coming up with ways so that we can actually, our solution to that is to put an even better processor and even better code into the phone so it's, quote, not necessary. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But as we've been discussing, so many people, they really don't think in terms of taking a picture that's so good it can be your Christmas card photo, or taking a picture that's so good that 20 years later you will have absolutely no regrets that you shot it with a phone instead of going back into your bedroom and grabbing your camera out of the closet to take a picture with that instead. So where is the motivation for them to really push the limits like that? That's why the Lumia 1020 is such an impressive camera, because nobody was asking for a 40 megapixel sensor. No one was asking for on-camera flash. No one was asking for the simple thing where you can suddenly get access to every single manual control on the flight deck. And yet they said, no, we want to take the greatest pictures that you can ever take with a camera. And I swear, when I go through my Flickr feed, sometimes I have to remind myself that No, that was not taken with my $500 Micro Four Thirds camera. This was taken with the Nokia, like with a damn phone, as I like to say.
So Apple must be very carefully balancing the need for a thinner phone with the need for a better camera. I guess focusing on software.
The desire for a thinner phone.
Exactly. You know how
I mean, and I would say their desire for a thinner phone. Mine's never thinner, you know, because I always have a battery on it.
I don't really think about that. You're right.
I have a Mophie on
phone
the whole time.
So thin. Does not
the bone fits bone fits so well into that, my battery pack
that isn't what they mean. The thinness it translates into weight, and for them lighter is better. That's why when everyone picked up the iPhone 5, they said, "Oh, it just feels so light, it's not real." And that's what they were after, and thinness as a side effect of
the
lightness.
I think that's wrong too. We got a Xiaomi here. This is the big phone in China, the company that Hugo Barra left Google to go run. This is now look at this. The Xiaomi. This is the company that's copying Apple, right? They even say one more thing in their presentations and everything.
Mi 4.
This is the Mi 4, not the Mi 2. So it feels very light, and I thought it felt kind of cheesy because of that. And by the way, that's because my M8, your M8 as well, is a heavy phone.
Yeah, it is.
I don't think heavy's bad, especially if you get better battery life.
Yeah, I do feel it in my Scotty vest.
You do feel
it. You put it in the front, you're like... I need to put something else on the other side.
Remember the razor?
It starts hurting my back.
Yeah. There has to be a happy medium, though, between a phone that's so thin and light that it lasts 10 seconds on battery and takes 2 pixel photos, and something that is thick enough to stop an assassin's bullet if you keep it in your chest pocket. It's like Alex was saying, that's a good metaphor. The Family Feud quiz. I don't think there would be any people in that quiz who would say, what if the question were, what do you want your next iPhone to have as a feature? Oh no, this is too thin, this is too heavy, is probably not a complaint that's going to register on the board.
No.
This has a customized Chinese Android. I just took a picture with it. By the way, the screen on this is really nice. It's fantastic, Jason says.
Amazing what you can
do. The picture's not great. Partly that's because I'm kind of...
That's a big thing. It's
Apple's, the same cameras in the OnePlus. Everybody's using the same sensors now. Right. In fact, everybody, isn't Apple still using Sony sensors, the same kind of sensor? Yep. I think the color is very good on that, don't you think, Alex?
Yeah.
It's a little blurry. You either moved or I moved, but I think that, there's a little.
Yeah.
But I think...
it's all blurry.
It's satisfying.
It's okay. I wouldn't use it anywhere, though. That's the problem. For me, if it's a little blurry, that's the end of it.
Well, let me do another one. Maybe that could just be me.
We're going to use it to remember Alex on set.
Okay, I'll hold very still. Stop moving. Don't. This is like, pretend we're in, this is a...
Are you hyperlapsing him, Leo?
In the 1880s. And I'm taking, and you can't smile. Because you
get
can't.
The sequence.
Now, that's much better. That's scary. That's scary, Alex. Now, see there, you know what? Because now the detail's very good on that. I'm going to use that.
That is exactly like those 19th century pictures where the person is just so irked to have to stand still. That's always the expression.
Exactly.
Edward Muybridge here. I think that looks quite good. The color is, you know, so there's a couple of things that Apple does really well. One is color, right? Fidelity is excellent.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tone mapping and white balance are fantastic on every iPhone over the past 2 or 3 years. That's something like my daily carry is the Nexus 5. I like it a lot. The camera is good, but it's not great. It's the sort of thing where I have to spend a few minutes in aperture fixing, but improving. And those 3 minutes amount to what I get when I just simply tap that one button on an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's one area. Now, we are seeing Mac Rumors is publishing pictures of the iPhone. This is the 4.7-inch version, finally assembled. And we're going back to the – I think these are accurate. Renee Ritchie, you're my rumor vetter.
Historically, they have been accurate.
Feldfolk?
You never know what Apple's doing as a prototype run or a test manufacturing run and what they change before final production. But historically, these have been accurate.
Yeah. It's back to the kind of rounded edges
refined.
Of the
rounded,
earlier iPhones.
Well, that's what we heard. Like when iOS 7 came out, I heard that they were going to be making it rounder just because you start to have bezel gestures and things coming out the side, and it feels more comfortable when it's round again.
This is a good, this is also from Mac Rumors, size comparison. If they do, in fact, a 4.7 and a 5.5, compare the 5S all the way on the left to the iPad Air all the way on the right. I like that 5.5 inch. That's feeling good to me.
Yeah.
John Gruber used the Pythagorean theorem. And
I'm sure he did a regular expression.
I'm just, did he gripped it? Well, in fact, Gruber's speculation is kind of not being borne out by iOS 8, midden.
It's hard to say because numbers don't mean what people... Like, numbers are easy to misunderstand. They're very similar to statistics. And I'd also... Dave Wiskus, who's John Gruber's partner on Vesper, he did a screenshot of Vesper using the dimensions that Gruber put out. If you want to see what it actually looks like, it's in his Twitter timeline. But the important thing... A lot of people talk about resolution. A lot of people talk about density. But for Apple, neither... Those things are sort of byproducts. What they care most about is tap target size because that's how people use their devices. So, for example, when they were making the iPad mini, they had to hit a 7.9 about size. And the only question about whether they could shrink the display down, the current iPad interface down, was whether the tap target size was big enough. It wasn't whether the resolution was this, the pixel count was that. Could human beings reliably and consistently hit the buttons on that phone? And when they bring this up, it's not going to be a matter of, like, there will be technical things, like there will be 3X, there will be densities, there will be Super Retina, all these technical terms. But at the end of the day, Apple's going to make sure that on a 4.7-inch phone and a 5.5-inch phone, you can easily hit the same 44-point button that you can hit on an iPhone today, and everything else is going to be a byproduct of that.
And if that happens, it's going a lot of developers are going to have to guess as to how that's going to feel. But it's not until they get a device in hand that they can actually put this code on those devices that they're going to realize what mistakes they've made and how they need to re-engineer this for this other screen size. I don't think it's conceivable that you can have a true universal app. You really do have to fine-tune the interface for every screen that you anticipate you're going to have to hit.
So Gruber speculated, doing the math. He says, "I have no information, but I have spent the last month trying to figure out pixel counts for the displays." He finally comes to the conclusion that if you do a even multiple of existing displays, developers are going to hate you less. So he predicts the 4.7 inch will be 1334 by 750. That's double. Mm-hmm. And 326 pixels per inch, which is a nice... Anything over 300 is, I think...
And we used to... For the print resolution used to be that.
That's
that
what it, I mean, you laser know, writers
yeah,
was...
But even when we thought about, like, yeah...
That's so that's... You can't see the dots at a normal viewing app. He said for the 5-inch, and actually I really like this, 2208 by 1242, much more than 1080p, and 461 pixels per inch. He says that's three times the...
Yeah, just put that in perspective, if that actually happened, that is higher than an art magazine.
It's beautiful.
Yep.
His numbers are based on, so for the 4.7-inch, he's keeping the at 2X size of the current iPhone and increasing the pixel count. So there's two competing sort of preferences here. Some people want everything to be bigger. Like if you're hard of sight, you want the text to be bigger, the graphics to be bigger. You want to have the space to see the same stuff, only bigger scale. And other people want more pixels. They want to be able to actually fit more stuff on the screen, keeping it the same size. In the world of dynamic text and adaptive layout, maybe you'll be able to eventually choose. But right now, you've got to pick one of those things. So for the 4.7 inch, he's saying that it's going to stay 2X. So it's going to stay the same resolution, 326 pixels per inch. They're just going to add pixels to it, much like they added pixels to make the iPhone 5 4 inches instead of 3.5. And then for the 5.5, instead of just adding pixels, they're also going to go to add 3X, which means one point on the original iPhone back in 2007 is now divided up into 3 points, so a grid of 9 pixels. And that will mean that, you know, it's going to stay sharper when you get to those bigger sizes, but everything will also get bigger, almost like on an iPad Air. It's bigger than the iPad mini. 3X is a little bit more problematic for developers, though, because 2X, everything still landed on the pixel grid. 1 became 2. Now, if 1 becomes 3 or 3 becomes 1, things start to fall off that grid, and that's where things like aliasing happen, so you don't get the clean edges anymore. So there's a little bit of angst in the designer community already.
So would it be better instead of 3X to have 4X, double-double?
It would, but that's such an obscene amount of pixels.
You can't even. Yeah.
Well, and when we think about those pixels, it's not just the design of all of those. It's also the display of those and the GPU required or whatever they're going to call it that's firing it to the screen. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that I really felt like the Retina didn't really perform as well as it could have when it first came out, was because the processing behind it didn't keep up with what they did with the pixels.
Retina tax.
Right.
and then there is iOS 8. Evidence, this coming from Mark Gurman, 9to5Mac, in the new Xcode 6 Beta 6 and in the plists in iOS 8 that There is an iPhone with a resolution of 414 by 736. And there is a, well, I don't know. He's guessing or estimating. I don't know. I can't parse this. Would you help me, please?
Between Gruber and Gurman on Twitter, if anyone wants to go look.
Are they going back and forth?
Yeah, because it's hard because points and pixels, you know, points are constant. One point on the screen is a constant thing. How many pixels that point is made out of can change. Original iPhone, it was one pixel per point. Now there's four, two in each direction. And, you know, using Gruber's math article and Gurman's earlier reports, there'll be three. So 9 by 9 making up each of those things. So what those numbers mean is that, you know, 700, is that the total size of the screen? Is that the number of points? Is that some half ratio for an iPad app, for a half screen iPad app? It's really hard to tell based just on Xcode. There's just so many possibilities that those numbers could plug into.
I do have to say they use a website called Is This Retina? isthisretina.com, yeah. Which is kind of fun to play with all these possibilities and what it would look like. What the pixels per inch would be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to, you know, you can see what the existing resolutions are and then play with it a little bit. So this would be a 5S would be 11. Becomes Retina if you're more than 11 inches away. It's 325 pixels per inch.
It's a function of distance. That's why an iPad Air is under 300 pixels per inch, but it's still quote-unquote Retina because you hold it further away.
Right. iPad mini with Retina display 324. This is actually kind of a useful calculator if you want to play with this a little bit.
But now we're getting into the same sort of malarkey we used to get into when we used to talk about CPU clock speed.
I know.
Where it's like, okay, this number is better than that number.
It's malarkey.
Unless you're betting money on which number was going to be bigger when both phones are released. It's more like, you know, what happens when you actually look at this thing? What kind of visual impact does it create? And I've got tablets in my office that have just insane levels of detail. And then I think, wow, this is really nice. This is really great. And then I will get out like my an iPad Air, which has the, quote, inferior screen resolution. And I realized that, no, I wasn't reacting to the detail. I was reacting to the fact that the screen brightness was a lot higher on this one or the way that this video was tuned. So it's an interesting debate, but it's the sort of thing that Apple divorced itself from years ago, I think.
And it'll get to a point where the resolution is just high enough that no human can discern pixels, and they'll be able to do what they did on the Mac, and that is render at whatever size is easy for designers and then scale it down to whatever size fits the device.
That's what you want, right?
We'll never have to worry about it again.
But Renee, the key is that you want to make sure that you scale it high enough so that it can be detected by analysts.
But that's what you want, don't you? You want high DPI. And then
these are all fine.
But I think we're getting to a point. Anything over 300 DPI, I think, is great. I mean, it's what you've been looking at in magazines for a long time. I don't know if it. I have a hard time believing it needs to get any higher than that. So when we start seeing 400, 500, I mean, this gets into that whole.
That's what your M8 is. That's 425.
Point. Right, but I'm saying concerns. It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't at that point. You're.
The Android devices are using conventional screens. So they're using 1080p or they're using 2K, and it's just easy if everyone buys the same panel size.
Right.
So if they're going to make that, then any manufacturer can get it. And there'll be different technologies, but at least they're a standard. Apple has not so far in iOS device history stuck to any standard resolution, so they can make anything they want.
But you did see, I'm sure you did, the Android fragmentation graphic that was generated by OpenSignal. And, of course, there's the fragmentation of different Android devices, but this is the various Android screen sizes. But you're making a good point. That is deceptive, so because if they're 1080p, it doesn't matter what the screen size is. The resolution is fixed.
Right.
And their whole system is so different anyway with Fragment. It's not the same kind of design paradigm at all.
Fragmentation is to Android fear and certainty as doubt as compatibility used to be for Macintosh fear and certainty and doubt. If you want to make a BS argument that will scare somebody off, there are a lot of reasons to not get Android, but fragmentation is not one of them.
It's the opposite side of flexibility. If you want to have a bunch of different devices, then the price for that is a little bit of extra work for developers. Yeah. If you want only one device, then you can have everything nice and consistent. But, you know, some people want more than one kind of
device. Well, and that's the funny thing about using the word fragmentation. You could show the same graphic and say Android choice, mm-hmm. and then say, oh, wow, look at all the choices I have. Yep. So, yes, it's fragmentation and or choice. It's like this. It's all
that's always been the defining difference, I think, between Android and iOS. It's someone who's very, very smart and thinks a lot about this will make all the decisions for you, and that works out great. Or you can basically have about 12 to 18 different rational options and pick the one that you like, which also it has its strengths. So
as always, on a non-news day, we've ended up spending 45 minutes talking about nothing. We're not done. There's more about nothing coming up in just...
Well, we're going to speak more and more about less and less until we're talking completely about nothing.
I love it. Like when we're about get just days away from an Apple event.
And we haven't even started talking about Lena Dunham's Emmy dress. When are we talking about that?
Was she wearing a tutu? Was that a tutu?
Bravo for anybody who wears something different. Sometimes though, you see a dress that you wonder if it's intentionally provocative. Like if it's, oh, you know what? Not only do I not care about what people write about me, I'm going to throw meat to the wolves. I'm going to show you how cool I am by not caring about it.
I think next week we should make it Tutu Tuesday. We'll all wear it.
We should make that a two-parter.
Silence.
We'd have two Tutu Tuesday.
Tutu Tuesday
like
part two.
Challenge. It's just for tutus. Be great.
Our show today brought to you by lynda.com. Lynda. You know about Lynda. The best way, the most affordable way to learn, stream thousands, by the way, beautifully produced, high-quality video created by experts who are also expert teachers, thousands of courses in software, web development, graphic design, things like business skills. They work directly with the people who are in the field using this stuff and the companies that produce it to provide timely training, often on the same day new versions or releases hit the market. So, for instance, they now have courses on iWork for iPad Essential Training, iOS App Development Essential Training, Monday Productivity Pointers. The Yosemite classes will be out instantaneously when Yosemite hits. They've got classes on the new Office apps from Microsoft on the iPad. And it's not just these great videos produced at the highest quality, not homemade, but, you know, YouTube style, but really good stuff. But they're then broken into bite-sized pieces so you can learn what you want, when you want, at your own pace. You can go from beginning to end or just go right into it because they've got searchable transcripts and playlists. So you can go right to the part you want. Certificates of course completion, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile. Very handy if you're looking for work. Whether you're a beginner or advanced, lynda.com has courses for everyone, plus apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android, which help you learn on the go. $25 a month, that's all you pay. You get unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. There's also a premium plan. And with the annual plan, that means you could download courses to your iPhone, iPad, or an Android, so you can watch them on the plane or wherever you're offline. Premium plan members also get project files and practice along with the instructor. I want you to try it, lynda.com, for whatever software, whatever tasks you have in business. There you go. Use it. This is Green Screen Techniques for Video and Photography. Richard Harrington and Abba Shapiro. Learn the green screen for software, any software, any hardware.
Lynda.com. And it's really, it is the best, folks. I mean, Richard and Abba are both friends of
you
mine.
You know them, yeah.
And they are the kind of guys that I talk to when I'm trying to pick someone's brain about figuring something out. So it's you're not just getting someone who can do training. You're getting the guys that do the best training.
Yeah, learn Photoshop from Burt Monroy. Learn photography from Derek Story or Ben Long. I mean, you're learning from the best. We have a special offer for you. I said that it was $25 a month. But you can have a whole week free if you go to lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. I want you to try it because I know there will come a time when you say, I have to know how to use Excel tomorrow. I have to be able to design a website today.
And it's not even that you have to know everything about it. It's that I need to figure this out, and you can search through Lynda, and they've broken everything up into little videos.
Cool.
So I'm just going to watch this 5 minutes about how to use this new tool in Photoshop that I haven't seen before, or, you know, that's the...
And some of this, by the way, we're focusing on how it's good for your work, but some of it's just good because you're interested in learning. Like, I always... Right. I don't have any reason to do typography, but I'm fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. So I would, you know, learning typography from a professional typographer is just awesome. You know, they have great classes and that kind of thing. So maybe you just, you know, you want to, you know, learn more about color and using color in your designs. They have classes on that. So it doesn't just have to be to get, you know, better. Deke McClellan's techniques on Photoshop and Illustrator. Deke's great. I love him. Pixel Playground with Burt Monroy, and on and on and on. I'm sorry. I am going on and on and on. Lynda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Should I run over to Walmart and get a 5C for Henry for 97 cents?
Holy smokes.
Holy moly. An iPhone 5S, 79. Sorry?
It's a contract that comes with it. It's not the upfront price.
Damn. There's always a catch.
iPhone 5 and change from a dollar. Only
actually, actually, that raises the issue that will this new iPhone be more expensive? Some are saying you may see it be, you know, $900.
The theory is that the iPad Air is $100 more expensive than the iPad Mini. So if Apple has two sizes of iPhone, the one that's bigger could theoretically be, you know, some number, maybe $100 more than the one that's smaller.
But I think a loaded iPhone 5 now is
$1,000.
Is $1,000?
Yeah. So you could go there.
Yeah. I've been there.
I mean, like Apple has, like people get upset because Apple charges $100 for the difference in storage, which is ludicrous because storage doesn't cost that much. But what Apple realized is that there's only certain things people will actually pay more money for. And screen size is something they've been trying on the iPad now. So it's a bigger screen. That's worth more money to you. Okay, great. So they have one that they sell at lower margins, one they sell at higher margins, and hopefully in the middle is what everybody actually buys. It's a typical sort of marketing thing.
But I think one thing that you often see is that Apple buyers oftentimes do buy the more expensive ones. I mean, when you look at the trajectory of what gets sold out, and maybe they just make less of them, but usually it's hard to get the top-of-the-line ones. They seem to go very quickly, at least in the early days.
I don't know if that might apply. Remember, we're talking about one model that has just different capacity options and different options like that. I think that most of the people who buy iPhones aren't quite so locked into the idea of getting an iPhone or even getting a premium phone. I really do think there are people who come in expecting to spend $199 on a two-year contract phone and then buying whichever one strikes their fancy the best that seems to have cover all the bases that they want. So I think that's the whole reason why they came out with the iPhone 5C to begin with, that they can't, there's more room to play at the lower end than at the higher end at this point. But I think that if they came out with a larger screen phone and they charged $100 extra for it, I think they would definitely get it, because they wouldn't be selling it as a jumbo sized phone, which is really the only way that Samsung can sell the Galaxy Note. They would sell it as something between a phone and an iPad, and they would find no shortage of people who want that. We've been horny for a larger screen phone since like 2012 at least. There is a lot of pent up anxiety, and there's a lot of people who are gonna like, son, I'm taking your mayonnaise jar full of lawn care tip money. I'll get it back to you in a couple months. Daddy needs 5.5 inches of phone.
All right. Well, how about this? Bloomberg just now reporting that Apple is preparing a 12.9-inch iPad for early 2015.
Mm. They've been working on that for a while. There's some thinking, I don't know if this is going on in Apple or not, but there is some thinking that right now people have a 4-inch iPhone and the iPad mini is really popular. But when the iPhone goes to 4.7 and 5.5 inches, what'll that do to the iPad mini? Because that phone now is really close to the iPad mini size. So will that cannibalize the iPad mini a little bit? Or will it push people back towards the iPad Air? Because now they have something that's large that they can travel with. Maybe traveling with the iPad won't be as big a deal anymore. Maybe having one at home will be more important. And then, well, what if they have a 13-inch iPad at home? Is that even better? So before you went from two small devices, and now there's a possibility we'll go to two larger devices.
I mean, I think that if they give up the religiousness about no keyboard, I mean, someone can build a keyboard, but I think that Apple really ought to think about, I mean, I want to have something that's really, as a business traveler, I really want something that's operational, you know, if I'm going to get something that's that big.
Does the Surface
Pro 3
attract you?
It does. It does. I look at those ads, and I look at Photoshop on a Surface, and the Photoshop ad has been very effective with me, thinking not so much that I want a Surface yet, but that I really want Apple to build something that's really a computer that I can touch, you know, and having the mixture of those things, I think would be very compelling. And I'm hoping that a bigger one means they're kind of bringing that together.
Those ads.
I agree 100%, because I really feel as though I need something between something a little bit more than an iPad, a little bit less than a MacBook. And if Apple were to create a 13, and given all the things we're seeing about iOS 8, about how it's going to solve a lot of the problems of people like me who try to use an iPad, a full-size iPad as a business travel computer, I don't need to have 9 overlapping windows, but it'd be nice to be able to have two things side by side, one in a small tile, one in a larger tile. It'd be nice if apps work together a little bit more harmoniously. If they had a 13-inch screen that not only would accommodate that kind of stuff with its extra real estate, but also if they simply said, we're not going to create something as vulgar as an attached keyboard like we see on the Surface, but we'll put mounting points inside this so as to make it really, really easy to make really, really cool integrated keyboards that make it look like a super, super slick notebook.
Because
the only question in my mind is which I think they would have to delete something from the MacBook Air line to avoid the Samsunging the product line. They don't just simply spray a hose into the marketplace and say pick up off the floor the device that you want and then come here and pay me for it. It is always we've decided which three we want to sell you. Pick one of these three.
Well, I think that in some ways that the 12.9 could be that where we really see this merger of the two OSs. At some point, where I can really run some of those things. Because, for me, it's, my 11-inch, the way I use my 11-inch, I look at it and I think this could be an iPad if I just felt like I could do what I do with that 11-inch, on a plane, mostly.
This is I should point out, Microsoft does not compare the Surface to an iPad. They compare it to...
Not anymore.
Yeah, they compare, because of the cost.
Well, yeah.
Well, also well, because they don't want people...
Well, mostly because the price. you're talking $1,200-$1,300 for a Surface Pro with a keyboard.
Tried. They were totally unsuccessful in marketing it against the iPad. So now they're trying the MacBook Air. And that's the only concern I have is that Microsoft has not been able to prove that enough people want this as a product category. Maybe Apple could, but so far it's like either they didn't do it right or it doesn't exist. And I'm not sure which one that is yet.
Yeah.
Or they have customers that really want something very similar to whatever the last thing that they had is. They're not. I don't think that Windows users are nearly as adventurous as Mac people, and they're not willing to deal with a phone that doesn't do cut and paste for a year, even, no matter how good and how clearly the next thing the first iPhone was.
Well, I think for Microsoft, their market, we always have to remember, is so big that all they really have to do is retention, and they make it.
They are the hog butcher of the world, literally. Sorry, not literally. They are the hog butcher of the world in their role of serving the business needs of people who just need to keep the gears of industry greased and turning.
Right.
Did you see that Steve Ballmer, after he left Microsoft, did a marathon of The Good Wife, watched 100 episodes of The Good Wife in 2 weeks?
I just loved his clip.
Steve Ballmer.
Why?
Sounds like a man who's severely depressed.
Why? Don't understand.
100 episodes of The Good Wife.
Or maybe because Homeland, I understand. 24, I understand. The Good Wife, I don't.
You don't want Palmer watching 24. That would just not end well for anybody.
Think about the first day you had maybe you were 18 or 19 or 20, 21. Your first day where I'm not in school, I'm not in college. For the first time since I was 4 years old, I can do whatever I want with this one day. I'm going to seize this day by the horns and be productive. And it was like, no, I'm going to enjoy the fact that I can just sit all day and do this and watch my hands doing this. Because for the first time, this can be number one on my agenda. Yeah. So good for him after being a CEO for one of the most abused CEOs for the past 20 years, that he can now say, if I just want to sit on the sofa and have pizza delivered and watch a marginal series, simply because I don't have to solve anybody's problem or be anybody's whipping boy.
You're not going to have Bomber to kick around anymore.
They don't mention a bong in this story, but I have to think the bong was involved. 100 hours in 2 weeks, 50
Microsoft
hours a week.
Canceled after 3 years of
that's like a full-time job.
More than a full-time job.
It's part-time at the PixCorp.
8 hours a day.
I just watched all of Doctor Who, so I can't say anything.
That's a lot.
How many Doctor Whos did you watch?
The modern era. So I watched 7 seasons waiting up to the new episode last week. A lot of Doctor Who. I speak a little bit British now. Sorry. So sorry.
I have a lot of catching up to do. When I get fired from this job, I will watch.
When you fire yourself.
Myself, which I'm about to do, by the way. I'm just fed up with myself.
You're on thin ice.
Battery problems with iPhones. There is a replacement program if you're having them. I do remember that some iPhones just...
We have a couple in our company that actually have problems with their iPhones dying very quickly.
A very small percentage of units may suddenly experience shorter battery life or need to be charged more frequently, like every hour. But the good news is there's a support website you can go to. You can the iPhone 5 battery replacement site, and you can go and enter your serial number and see if this is essentially a recall. And, you know, when the trade press is very nice to Apple because they could really have that big headline, Apple recalls iPhone 5 for battery problem. And that would be bad.
And these recalls almost always are, not always, but almost always a small percentage, you know, but it's still millions. It's probably millions of people that
you sell a lot. Yep. Yep. It's an iPhone 5 sold between September 2012 and January 2013 for just one quarter. There is a limited serial number range, so you have to go and get your serial number and enter it in and see if you qualify. But if you know, it's worth doing it. Yep. If you've been noticing. How bad is it, the bad battery life?
I know. I know that I'm complaining about mine all the time. So I'm gonna see if mine's that I complain about my battery. Yeah, I feel like my bad. This iPhone is it? It's a five. It's a five, right?
It's a five.
That's what I have, and I feel like this is the worst battery I've ever had in a phone.
Well, but like what? How soon do you charge it?
I'm just constantly plugging it in.
I think you should go there and enter it.
It's like I'm just
that's not normal.
I don't know. I mean, it's some days it'll go. Interestingly enough, different in different locations, I find it to be very, very different. So, in Pennsylvania, which I just moved
see,
to,
that's the
it
radio.
Lasts a lot longer than it does in San Francisco.
It has to do with radio hunting.
I understand
hunting.
It deals with radio hunting, yeah, but it's...
Do you have it with you?
Yeah, I'm going to check it right
let's,
now.
Let's enter it in here.
I was in New York last week, and my battery drained in front of my eyes just because roaming is so terrible.
Yeah, New York and LA.
I'll do it for you. Just you go to the settings, general, and you'll see the about section, and then you'll find your serial number in there. Let's just do that right now.
It'll be interesting to see, Alex, when you put...
you're doing that. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Alex.
You don't want to say that loud?
No, I'm paranoid.
What, people will like...
I don't know. I don't know what
you
look. I don't know what
you
can do.
If you turn off Facebook auto refresh and a bunch of other Facebook stuff, you might get double the battery life.
In fact, I have now started deleting Facebook from my mobile devices and just saying I'm going to do it on the desktop because it is notoriously a
Facebook
battery
Skype.
Hog.
There's a few bad corporate citizens,
and that's why. Sorry, you're not eligible.
No,
it's not. Our records show your battery has already been replaced, or it's not one of the affected.
Okay, fine. I just use it badly.
Anyway,
use Facebook, so.
Take it off.
But I like it.
No, but don't do it on your phone. Do it on the desktop.
But I like it on my phone. I don't want to use it on my desktop. I don't want to use Facebook on my desktop.
Turn off the auto refresh stuff, and then it'll still update when you go to the app, but it won't always be turning in the background.
Oh, I have the auto refresh off on Facebook. When they first released the Facebook app, I was like, this is stupid. Why would you ever use it on the little phone? And now I never go to Facebook on
the
desktop.
I think you have a problem. You should stop.
Oh. I don't go that often. I just that's where I look at Facebook.
What are you looking for?
No, I'm just looking at stupid things. Mostly
that's
ice,
right.
Mostly ice bucket challenges.
It's stupid things.
That's like when I need to relax. I just look at Facebook and there'll be some stupid video.
I did an ice bucket challenge for an iPhone last week. I felt bad about myself, but I did it.
You did it for an iPhone?
Well, so Samsung put out that commercial where they showed a Galaxy S5 doing the ice bucket challenge and challenging the iPhone. And it offended me as a product marketer because it wasn't very creative, but also it did an ice bucket challenge. And this is a waterproof phone in a way that any normal phone could survive. I mean, if they'd thrown it in a bucket of ice water, that would have been fine. Game over. But they kind of just poured ice water on the top and none of the ports were visible, nothing else. And I looked at it and I said, I'm fairly sure an iPhone would be perfectly fine doing that. So I wanted to see if it would be, and turns out it was perfectly fine.
That gives me chills. I've had such bad experiences doing stuff like that. Remember, I'm the one who put an iPhone in a glass of water.
How'd that work?
Not well. I brought it because it stopped working, right? I was testing Liquipel. You remember this. Liquipel was that thing that they process your phone and then it magically resists.
Oh, right. It didn't survive.
But then I brought it to the iPhone repair place. He says, I've never seen anything like this. He replaced all the components and he said, look at your SIM tray. There's even burn marks from short circuiting on your SIM tray. I mean, this is nothing. It could get it back. And then I brought it to the Apple store. And the guy says, I saw what you did.
the mark.
The video in the chat room.
I saw what you did. $200 to replace it, though. That was nice of him. Yeah. He didn't have to do that. That was the genius being nice to me. Let's take a break. Come back with more. We've got, there you go. The ice bucket challenge. That's you, Renee?
Yeah, that's my iPhone.
I guess
what
you
other
have to...
phones did the iPhone nominate, Renee?
Maui Challenge, Samsung's design team.
Oh, you even Siri'd it in response.
Yeah, I challenged the. I kind of regret that, but I challenged the Samsung design team, and then at the end, I said if they have one.
Oh,
oh, snack.
What? Smack? Snap?
Snack? Is it snap? Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying to adopt the vernacular of the younger generation to brought my
smack.
Darn if it didn't smack my little backside. And
oh, gauntlet thrown.
Leo, your face looks marvelous.
You might think I'm applying a very lovely face cream to myself here, but in fact,
this is Kenny Rogers act.
This is
Legends in Las Vegas brings to you the Kenny Rogers Experience.
This is the I hope there's a razor in this. Oh, whew. this is the Harry's shave cream, which is like a it smells so good.
It's magnificent.
You use it?
Yeah, they sent me one, and it's all natural. It smells great, and the unboxing experience is positively Apple-esque.
It's Apple-esque.
How are you using it?
What do you mean?
I shave once in a while, Alex.
Okay, all right.
Everybody has to shave some part of their body.
Right.
This has natural marula, which I don't know what that is, but apparently people do, and coconut oils. Marula is like a nut, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it smells so good. And then watch, because this is the proof is in the pudding. I'm not even using any water. I did not prepare my beard in any way for this shave.
He's not even cutting himself. It's very dangerous.
I've been using Harry's razors now and blades for, 6 or 7 months, and I have never cut myself, not once.
How about that build quality? Look at that handle.
Look at that handle. You know what? Part of the secret to Harry's is the guys who started Harry's, Jeff was one of the guys who started Warby Parker.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of research before he did the startup, and he said, what makes a great razor blade? And he actually found out that there's only two factories in the world, both of them in the same small town in Germany, that can make a razor blade this perfect. Most companies, by the way, do not want you to have great razor blades. They want you to keep buying more, right? And so they actually bought the company.
That's
they
one
bought
way to do
the
it.
Factory.
They made so much money with Warby Parker that we decided to buy all the razors.
Oh, I don't know. No, I think they took investment money for this. Yeah. So the idea was, just like Warby Parker, they wanted to kind of use the internet to disenfranchise the really established monopolies. I mean, you look at Gillette, just the other day at the drugstore, you can't actually buy it. You have to get a clerk to come over and unlock it because the blades are so damn expensive. Right. I spent $60 on Gillette blades because I wanted to do a head-to-head comparison. And I did. I shaved one half of my face with a Gillette, one half with a Harry's, and it was amazing. Right. Difference. You wouldn't think there'd be a difference. Look at that. I have just shaved entirely without water, just using that great Harry's shave cream, and it's soft.
Like a hovercraft for your face.
It is like a... I like it.
With blades.
I like it. Go to harrys.com. The way they do it is every other month you get a delivery. So I get 4 tubes of the shave cream every other month and 8 blades. Once a week I change my blade, and it's perfect, and it's just fabulous. That you can get the Winston kit, which is this one I'm using. It's got the nice metal handle, and of course I had it monogrammed Leo. Heather Hammond got one for her dad, my phone screener on the radio show. And because it already has an H for Harry's on it, she just said, I'm going to leave it at that because Hammond.
Right.
Right. So if your name begins with an H, you don't need to get the monogram. Just a little pro tip. It's got an H on it already. H apostrophe, see, Harry... Harrys.com. You can get this and get $5 off your first order if you use our offer code MacBreak. The videos of the factory are so cool, where they're making the blades. They make other stuff there too. They also have the Truman kit. That's actually the one Steve Gibson wanted because he, for some reason, he just liked that orange handle or something. I don't remember why. It's not because he was cheap, but it is less expensive. You get the kit for $15. It gets you set up with 2 blades, the razor, and of course a tube of Harry's shave cream, and then set up your regular deliveries. You're going to love it. Harrys.com. Use the offer code MacBreak to save on your first order. $5 off. Oh, this is Sarah's. Sorry, Sarah. I just shaved with her kit. Should have read the inscription before I did that. And thank you, Harry's, for your support of MacBreak Weekly. Look at that. I just shaved. No water.
On air.
Long enough for Leo, made for Sarah.
Go ahead, feel that. No, that's all right. Did you you were in Pittsburgh for the earthquake? You didn't feel the earthquake in Montreal.
I missed it.
No, I saw your tweet about it. That's where I found out about it.
I tweeted it. In fact, that was the interesting thing. It woke us up, those of us in the Bay Area, fairly strong, only about 30 miles from here in Napa. And I leapt from the bed and shouted earthquake.
As one does.
As
one does in California. We're trained. There's actually a class when you come to California. We show you how to jump out of your bed and how to say earthquake.
I felt kind of dopey afterwards, but that's what I did. And then I get back in bed, and this is it. This is me for the next 4 hours, because you can't go back to sleep after a big earthquake.
Right.
Just looking at the Twitter, and it went crazy.
I got a lot of text messages. Are you okay? I'm like, I'm just fine. I'm standing on over a lake in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. So it didn't affect us here in the brick house. We just wanted to pass that along. Everybody's fine. None of our employees had any trouble.
Nothing fell.
Many of our friends who are vintners had problems in Napa. A lot of wine lost. But I loved this. Do you wear? Actually, I have mixed feelings about this. Jawbone published a graph of their users, and you'll see the red line is Modesto, Santa Cruz, very far away. They barely woke up. The blue line is the folks in Napa, Sonoma, which is where we are, Vallejo and Berkeley. 74% of them woke up immediately. Yeah. And then it's a little lower number. But, you know, my takeaway from this is, wait a minute, they're aggregating my sleep data at Jawbone? These are Jawbone upwears.
Oh, these are right.
So apparently, just a little tip.
Yeah.
They're aggregating your data.
I'm sure it's anonymous. That's what everyone always says.
I was curious about drop cam users who have their cameras set to automatically record whenever they detect movement. So I was wondering what kind of traffic they were getting between those cameras and the servers during that time.
Oh, I bet. Well, I have the video. You want to see our video of where was it? I have it. John sent me a link. Yeah. It's not very dramatic. It's not very dramatic, I'll be honest with you.
It's like a big truck drove by.
Yeah. In fact, you have to really look hard to see anything happening. You got it? There it is. This is the, thank you, Chad. Get ready. Oh, the excitement's beginning. That's it right there. See the disco ball? A slight tremor.
Yeah, but, you know, that's enough.
We have a puzzle, though. This is the mystery. Watch this one. This makes it look like it's really bad because the camera is just sitting there. Oh, my God. Earthquake! Oh!
Red alert, Cleon's firing on the starboard bow.
But that really, it wasn't, you can see the little lamb on the camera going a little bit like that. So even though it was a strong earthquake, 6.0, and we weren't very far from it, it wasn't,
We're glad you're all safe and sound.
We're all safe and sound. And maybe you want to consider if you're wearing a Jawbone up. This is the mystery one, by the way. This is my office. And watch, a light comes on and then goes off. Okay, so now that light came on the minute it started shaking. And then a minute stops shaking. About 20 seconds later, light goes off.
Is it a? You do have a motion detecting light? Oh.
We cannot. We still, right, Burke? We still have no idea what happened. Burke has a theory that I find far-fetched, that the light switch that's attached, we think it's a big soft light right above me, softbox right above me, that I use for my key light, that the light switch on that must have been right.
Or it's loose or something.
But that makes no sense. First of all, we never leave it there because it's a fader. It'd have to be right there. And second of all, why does it go on exactly? Okay, I understand why it would go on exactly when it shakes because it shakes it in position. But why does it go off when it stops shaking? Have you figured that out?
The ghost was scared, and then the ghost,
went away.
Perhaps there is a staffer or an intern who's being underpaid who can't afford to live in the Petaluma area. He sleeps under your desk, unbeknownst to you. He heard the tremor, flipped on the light. I realized it was okay, flip the light back
on.
That's
what I think.
Yeah.
And then somebody else, actually, Burke also has, he thinks it could be ball lightning. So just
ball lightning.
I think it's aliens.
Yeah, invasion. Anyway,
that's our theory. Hey, good news. And this, I think, you know, it's a California story, but I think it applies to everyone because as California goes, so goes the nation.
Yeah, this is going to
be. The governor signed the kill switch bill. And so by July 2015, all smartphones have to have built-in kill switches. The idea is this would it's an anti-theft technology that would make it less desirable to steal smartphones. Apparently, that's become a big business, especially in the big cities of California.
And there was a huge drop after Apple put the kill switch in. I don't remember what the percentage was.
But iPhones already have kill switches.
Right, they already have them.
If you, well, you have to turn it on. You have to turn Find My iPhone on, right? It's not on by default.
Right, but there was already a big drop.
Right. And the fact that they do it in California, I think this is germane because nobody's going to make a smartphone just for California. So if you're making a smartphone, you're going to say, well, if I'm going to sell it in California, I have to do this.
California emission standards on cars.
Well, it's kind of like vaccination where even, you know, if most people are doing it, it takes the fun out of stealing it because your percentage on succeeding is much lower.
It's chiefly Samsung and Microsoft that have, you know, there is, I think the current version of Android has a Android device manager that has that capability.
Yeah, and also a tracking system that a lot of people don't know is actually there. So not only can it tell you where your iPhone is, it can also tell you where iPhone has been for the longest time.
Right.
So long as Apple gets on board and Samsung gets on board, really, that's almost every phone in America.
Right.
So
it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I don't know why. For the story was that the original bill was killed in the California legislature. Due to opposition from the cell carriers, I'm not sure why they would care.
Because they're making money on you replacing them.
That can't be really. They couldn't be that crass and greedy, could they? Verizon? Crass? Greedy?
Maybe AT&T? They're worried that some burden will fall on them to.
I think it's more like that.
Yeah,
I think they're more worried about liability.
Yeah, exactly. Liability, or if they have to change their infrastructure in any way to keep that function working, mm-hmm. they're certainly going to be responsible for sending out the pulse of death to kill the phone.
So basically, because Android has it and iPhone has it, I presume that what you'll see in July is they'll be as part of the setup. Would you like to turn this on? It already is on the iPhone, right? Yep. It already says turn on iPhone.
And you should turn it on.
You should.
That reminds me, and going back to the job one thing from a minute ago, I was looking at health in iOS 8 and HealthKit and the privacy settings in there. And they're actually really cool. They go beyond the normal privacy settings and they have whole privacy sheets for them. So basically, it's not that you'll enable or disallow an app or an accessory to use health, but you have granular control. You can say this app can use steps, but it can't use sleep. And you could say it can write to health. Kit, but it can't read from it. And if you say it can't read from it, it won't even disclose that you did that. And the example they use is, for example, if you have diabetes, you could deny access to your blood sugar levels, but it's not going to report back to the app, which could come from your health insurer, that you denied that access. And you can manage all of that at any point in time. It looks really well thought out.
Renee has an excellent, very detailed article he published yesterday on iMore Health in iOS 8 Explained. Highly recommend it if you want to know what to expect. The story, of course, we knew that they had met with the FDA. We're not sure, you know, to talk about what. Now they're apparently meeting with big insurers like Humana and United Health. This is from 9 to 5 Mac. So it feels like Apple's pushing to have HealthKit be more than just a repository of stuff from other people. To get FDA, for instance, to make health recommendations, you have to get FDA approval. If you want to interoperate with the patient data, you'd have to get approval from the big insurance companies and the medical companies.
Well, and we have to remember that the market above 55 that when you're talking about insurance and everything else is massive. So having something that was really focused on providing healthcare, advice or just interoperability with physicians could be just a massive growth without really, because there's nobody else competing. Everyone else is looking for geeks who are quite healthy and healthy but younger and statistically better off in that respect. And that I don't think that the current tech watches are really attracting the plus 55.
John Patchkowski, of course, has said that it will be October that Apple will announce the iWatch. But he said that early this summer. I don't think anybody has said anything one way or the other since. What are your sources say, Renee?
I think it's still, I mean, there was that thing where Gruber said September, but, you know, then he said that he was joking. But I haven't heard anything different than October either.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the launch or that's just the announcement, because Apple sometimes, especially for new products, gives people more time between the announcement and the launch.
So iPhone in a couple of weeks and availability, I think it's pretty safe to say will be constrained, as it always is when there's a massive redesign with the iPhone 5, the iPhone, you know, with the talk of the tick or the tick of the talk. But also, apparently, these incel screens that are needed to make it much thinner are tricky to make. And a lot of people reporting that Apple's having supply constraints. Would you say this would be, are we going to be lining up for this?
I don't know if I'm going to line. Well, I'll probably line up. I might line up. I mean, here's the deal is that I buy them every other year, so it's much more exciting for me. Yeah. You know, so
lines
you know.
Are great. But I think you could, I hope you'll be able to, and Apple's done it both ways, but I hope you'll be able to pre-order online and have it shipped to you.
Yeah.
I got to say that as someone who's been carrying an Android phone for the past 2 years, I'm really excited about the new one. If I like what I see, you know, that it's going to be, I'll certainly wind up buying one. This is everything I was complaining about a couple years ago. And so between the OS and these new size devices, I think it's the most exciting year in iPhone since practically year one.
I agree. I feel like they've solved my two issues, which are screen size, because I like a bigger screen, and I will get the big one, and keyboard. And the third-party keyboards is going to make a big difference for me. And I think now with extensions, there won't be much that Android can do that the iPhone can't.
There's so much you can do with extensions.
Yeah.
And every time I think about that, I
hope developers do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're working on it. Of it.
They're working on it, I'm sure, yeah.
Also, just for me, I'm selfish when it comes to photo features, and just the ability to finally have apps that take absolutely fine-grained control of the camera hardware now is such a big deal for me, because that's the reason why there are options on even Android phones for taking a picture that are unavailable to the iPhone, where it's a great one-tap button, but either it takes a good picture or it does not take a good picture, and if it does not take a good picture, put it back in your pocket because it is not capable of taking a good picture in this situation.
Speaking of one-tap buttons, Model S owners can now start their car with an iPhone if you have a Tesla. What could possibly go wrong? Now we have a new kind of butt dial, butt ignition.
Well, you could control the Tesla in various ways for a long time with the original app. They just added the starter feature to it.
Why is your car running? Oh, I must have butt ignited it.
The key is the
but I mean, it's not like my old car where it's got a starter motor that has to crank, and a crankcase oil that needs to warm up. Really, why do you need to start your car remotely unless it's just to gloat to other people? Hey, look what I can do with my car with my app.
Well,
okay, so as
you're in Boston. Wait, you're in Boston. I mean, there are good reasons to in Montreal with Rene. Yes. There are good reasons to start your car a couple minutes before you get there.
Electric car, no, because it's different.
Turn the heater on, though.
Well, but that's the thing. That's what kills the battery in electric cars. You don't want a heater. If you have an electric car in Boston, you're nuts. You're just driving around freezing. Yeah,
but while it's plugged in, you don't want to walk out there. It's still plugged into the wall.
Oh, it's still plugged in. That's what that meant. Yeah.
But I'm
going like this.
I'm like, it's plugged in, Leo.
Okay, you're right.
I mean the difference between starting the car and simply turning on the heater. I mean, it is a great app. I mean, I have a friend who has a Tesla and a really lovely dog, and sometimes the dog will have lunch or something. The dog will stay in the car, and unbeknownst to passersby, the car, the air conditioning is on. He's monitoring the temperature from like 20 feet away.
Neat.
And I always thought that as a gift for him, I should make this really nice placard that says, "Hi, this is a Tesla. The air, please, before you smash the window to quote rescue my doggy, please put your hand on the glass to feel how cold it is."
Actually, that's a very good point. If it's already plugged in, that is the time to heat up the car.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to do it when you're on battery. So now you get the car nice and warm, toasty warm.
While you're making your coffee, which you started. You start the coffee maker with your iPhone, and then you walk
over. Don't get out of bed.
You just, like, turn everything on, and you walk down, and it's great.
I wonder why the car even has an off switch. Why don't you just let it sleep? Hibernate.
Put to sleep, yeah.
It was funny. I have an auto starter on my car, and I use it every winter, and I would not give it up for the world. But I went to CES, and I was looking at, and this is before Android in the car, and they were showing off an Android-powered car, and it was Android 2.something, and they said, look, we have a couple different modes. Now, you can keep it on, but that'll drain your battery. You can put it in sleep, but after 8 days, that'll drain your battery. So we automatically switch it off. When you start it for the first time, it takes about 10 minutes to boot. So maybe it was 5 minutes. I don't remember. But there's a litany of things there made me realize that sleep, when it comes to cars, is not always
a good idea.
I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for the one that will come down from the parking garage and pick me up in the valet section. That's the.
Yeah.
public
bait.
There's so
many things to worry about with these things. We just, Alex just got talk. Alex and Renee started talking about how this Facebook app is draining the battery of Alex's phone. Now if there's like now that there's like Facebook in the car, well, how would you like to come back after 8 hours of work and find out that Facebook basically killed your car battery?
Sorry, honey, I couldn't come home. I couldn't come home because of Facebook. I'm stuck in the city.
Name auto update.
Yosemite OS 10, Yosemite Public Beta 2 pushed a couple of days ago, and feels like it's ready. Yes, Renee, you agree?
I mean, they have until October. I'm guessing they have until October, so there's still stuff. I mean, it's stuff that may not hit consumers, but things like provisioning and other things that they still have
to sort out. Don't you want to push it out when iOS 8 comes out? Because of continuity and handoff and all that?
I mean, maybe. They didn't do that for Mavericks, and there were features you had to wait for. There's usually a Mac and iPad event later in October and the last year. Maybe they could. I don't know. I tend to think I would rather have it good than fast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you on that. But I just feel like the timing would be good to release it with iOS 8.
Yeah, I agree.
If it's
especially
ready.
For continuity.
It feels pretty stable, exactly. I have to say.
They really – it almost feels like they really have to be able to demonstrate that one feature at least.
Right.
So – it wouldn't be the chimes of doom if they didn't, but what a shame if one of the coolest things to do with iOS 8 is something that they have to say, come back in January, it will probably be ready.
Yeah.
Good point.
It's been running on my production machine, and I'm loving it. Haven't had any problems. There are a couple of apps maybe that aren't compatible, but very few. I haven't had any serious issues at all.
Yeah, the new auto signing is out now, so hopefully people will update to that. Because a couple apps, you try to run them, and they say, you know, this app has been changed.
Oh,
yeah.
What do we do for that? Do we have to download something or to turn switch on?
The developers have to, you can still do the right click thing and give it manual override permission.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But developers have to update to support the new type of because basically it's that gatekeeper. And gatekeeper lets you run apps that aren't that are still signed by developers but not in the app store, and they change the way gatekeeper works.
Mm. Let me pose a question to the panel of people who are running iOS 8 on a daily basis. I'm nearly at the point where I feel as though I'm going to, now that we're close to what might be a launch date for iOS 8, I feel like I have to start using this every single day so I can not only think about and talk about it, but also write about it. Is it safe enough for daily use now?
Yes. I would have said up until the latest beta, I would have said, no, please don't.
Yeah.
But if you're a reviewer or a developer, not a normal person, because it voids your Apple Care and you should never do that. But for a developer or a reviewer, I think, it's safe now.
After a complete backup in which you decide that anything on this phone is subject to be deleted permanently. Yeah.
Summary deresolution.
Yes. You've been derezzed, Tron style.
It's just for some reason I don't mind doing a Yosemite beta, but I'm really reluctant to do iOS 8 beta. I don't know why.
Because I don't know why the iOS when the iOS betas are 10 times more painful than the desktop betas.
Yeah. When iOS doesn't work, it really doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a smell that pervades the entire house, and there might be one dead skunk that's causing it, but that doesn't change the fact that this house is now incompatible until you deal with the skunk.
There's nothing worse than having someone call that's important, and you're sitting there and you can't get the thing to work. You're like going, open.
I had a beta, not this one, but I had a beta previously that just didn't let the phone work as a phone. The phone calls would just not come in, and normal people shouldn't have to worry about that.
Yeah. iTunes 12. I'm a little disappointed that you'll get when you get the beta 2 of the public preview for Yosemite, you'll get iTunes 12 build 97. They really want to get rid of that gutter on the left, the one that shows, you know, my music and my playlist and all that stuff. They really don't want that there anymore.
If you hide it, the bloat's not there anymore, Leo. If you hide it, the bloat's not there anymore.
Oh, jeez. The good news is I hardly ever use iTunes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
it's funny how it's come to that because it was something that all of us used all the time, and now I open it up every once in a while. Usually, it opens up by accident when I plug my iPhone in. That's when I see it.
I've been buying go ahead.
iTunes has become like a corded phone in my life, where there are times when I have to seek one out and use it, but otherwise, it's totally irrelevant. And now, when I actually have to use it, I almost have to retrain myself because it's been so long that I've kind of forgotten.
I've been buying a high def music because I'm getting the Pono player in a couple of months and I want to have a lot of high def tracks. And iTunes will not play the higher def stuff, the 24 bit. I think it's
really?
Yeah, some it won't
stuff,
play.
They're not up on yet either.
Yeah. And I wish they would. So I could download Apple Lossless. This where I buy HD tracks does offer Apple Lossless, but I buy FLAC for just kind of, I don't know why. And but I've I just convert it to a high bit rate MP3 and then I've got it. And but I keep the I treat the original like a precious item.
Yeah,
because it is. I wish iTunes would support that. I
got to hear a conversation between Chris Licio, who does the Capo stuff, and Don Melton, who did all the Safari stuff, about audio, because they're both huge audio codecs nerds. And they were saying that the lossless to them is way more important than the 24-bit, because most humans can't tell the difference.
I agree.
But the lossless, you could, especially with certain instruments, especially in classical music, you can really tell the difference.
So here, for instance, is a 96 kilohertz 24-bit, which is plenty, by the way, version of Dylan's Blood on the Tracks. You could get it in AIFF, which is completely uncompressed.
Right.
And that's going to be a little bit big. Apple lossless FLAC or Wave, which they say several times we don't recommend.
So cute.
So cute. Apple lossless and FLAC are probably identical, right? They're just kind of using lossless compression like Lempel Ziv to... I'm sure that they're it's easy to transcode. I don't know why. I just buy FLAC. It's just kind of like, to me, like that's going to be the permanent standard.
It's a safety. I mean, it's an archival format.
Yeah, we'll play exactly.
On anything that's you know, not proprietary.
Yeah, exactly. It's these are kind of expensive. Like this is $18.
It's just like a CD.
It's like buying a CD.
But you don't have to deal with all that plastic.
But I buy the classics, right? Miles Davis Kind of Blue and stuff like that.
Is that another generational problem? Because I can sort of deal with the fact that an ebook costs almost as much as a printed book. I can deal with the fact that an electronically published comic costs about as much as a comic. But the generations under us can say, you didn't have to manufacture this. You didn't have to ship this. You didn't have to inventory this. All you had to do was move some files from A to B. And why are you charging me $3.99 for this comic that would cost me the same amount of money at the corner store?
It's
not that that bothers me. It's because what bothers me is that they're charging the same price for less rights. Like, I can't lend it to somebody. I can't do all these different... I can't resell it. There's no the second sale rights. That's the part that I shouldn't pay as much because I'm not getting as much is my only complaint.
But you are. You're getting more bits for your dollar.
I had all the bits in analog.
But not only that.
But only for the first play.
And I could lend it to Andy. I could lend my entire collection to Andy if I wanted to.
I feel like that's a trade-off because I can actually have now... I bought this comic for $3.99, but I can now make 6 copies of it for all my devices and not have to walk into another room to get the one copy that I have. And I instantly felt as though I have to amend what I said because it's not just bits. It's the cost is more than just printing. The cost is more than just shipping inventory. The cost is the talent that they have that have to be paid for all these books and the editorial that has to be put into it. But still, I wonder if we're this is the last opportunity that publishers have to have an audience that does not find it absolutely galling that a $19 set of bits is going to have to they chose that price because that's how much a full CD should cost.
But should I pay $4 more for the 192 kilohertz?
I say once you're going down that path, you might
go
as well
all the way.
That's what I would do.
But this is, I mean, look, this was recorded in the 60s.
You're going to hear all the tape hiss, all the compression. It's going to be great.
You should be able to ask, okay, was the singer still an active smoker while he recorded this?
So if I download Apple Lossless, Anthony W. is saying, I will be able to play it in iTunes. So there you go. And I found a program that converts, batch converting. So
it'd be nice if Apple supported the FLAC and if they supported WebRT and all the emerging standards.
There's an app, Vox, V-O-X. It's a player that plays back all these files. And it's a decent little player. Reminds me a lot of, what was the app that Apple bought to make iTunes in the original? SoundJam.
SoundJam, yeah.
It's a lot like SoundJam.
Well, and I think the big thing is once you start buying these, though, then like the Pono player, you need is it Pono or
Pono? I know it doesn't Pono sound player. Right. Yeah, when you say that.
But the you're going to have to think about the entire infrastructure that goes with it. You know, like what are you going to play with it, and what headphones are going to use? Have you picked your headphones for that?
I have some pretty good headphones. I'm not too worried about that. But actually, what I want is an optical. Oh, I guess you don't want optical out because the DAC in the Pono player is supposed to be a really good DAC. So it has analog out, and I'm going to put that into my stereo.
Right.
Right? So that's going to be my high def. Because I can't figure out how to get these tracks onto the stereo.
the last mile.
The last inch.
Right.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, your picks, my friends, your picks. Prepare them now. Our show brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm. Oh, no, no, much, much better. LegalZoom does the legal work you need to do that you can do yourself, your self-help stuff. They walk you through it step by step, self-help services at your direction without the big cost of a law firm. If you're starting a business, it starts at $149 plus filing fees to do an LLC or a Chapter S or Chapter C corporation. Now go to, call a law firm, go to the white pages. Hey, how much would it cost for a Chapter S? Thousands of dollars, more than 10 times more, 20, 30 times more.
I'm planning to use LegalZoom for a corporation this week.
See? What it does is it empowers you not only to do the stuff you probably should do, like your trademark and your LLC, but also it kind of encourages you to start businesses, right? Maybe start multiple businesses. Sometimes right. The nice thing about an LLC is you can spin off little businesses. You can do a lot more.
Well, what I'm doing is pretty simple. It's like a simple thing. I just need to build a corporation, and I just need to. But I don't really know how to do it, and file all the stuff. And here I can just get it done.
Last will and testament. You know, August is National Make a Will Month, and I think this is a good cause. There are a lot of parents who are just saying, "Well, I'm going to be fine. I don't want to. It's too much trouble. Takes too much time. It's too expensive to make a will. I'm not going to die. It'll be fine." But you know what? If anything happens to you, the courts decide what happens not only to your property but to your kids. You don't want that. You should, for $69, you can make a last will and testament. A legal document personalized for your state and your needs. Advanced provisions to safeguard your family and peace of mind backed by their $50,000 guarantee at LegalZoom.com. Make a will if you haven't done it. Trademark your blog name. Start your business. There's so much you could do at LegalZoom.com. I say this because it's kind of I feel like, you know, I'm joking around, but actually I think this is pretty serious. The pet protection agreement for $39.
What's the pet protection agreement?
It's a simple agreement that allows you to name a pet guardian to take care of your pets.
Okay.
Gives you the legal ability to leave funds to care for your pets. It's $39, and it gives you some peace of mind. You don't ever think about this, but what happens to Ozzy
when I kick the bucket?
LegalZoom was created by top attorneys to provide self-help services at your specific direction. They're not a law firm. The legal help is furnished, though, if you need it, through vetted independent attorneys. That LegalZoom legal plan is a great thing as well. Make your will. It's National Make-A-Will Month. Get special pricing on wills and living trusts by entering the offer code MBW in the referral box at checkout. You get a discount, $10 off, at LegalZoom.com. Offer code M, as in mama, B as in boy, W as in woohoo. Alex Lindsay, I bet you have a fabulous pick of the week.
I think I have a very useful one.
Okay.
So we, in the same thing we were talking about the iPhone batteries, we were really looking at what is wrong with some of our computers. You know, we plug them in and unplug them, and we're like, what is the actual health of our, and there's ways that you can do this kind of in a geeky way, but one that we've kind of started to install on some of the machines is one called Battery Health.
Yeah.
It's just a Mac program, and it's this great little, you know, I click on it, it goes up into your menu, and I click on it, and I can see what my current max is, my original max, my health, my health of my battery is starting to wane, 82%. I know exactly how many cycles that it's been charged, when it was created, and again, these are things that you can hack out, but it's a free application, you know, so
that's neat.
And it's really, really easy, and just shows you everything you need to know about your battery. And for many of us who are traveling, it's nice to know where you're going to start making decisions. Like at 82%, I'm starting to think that maybe we have somebody else that has one that we tested. And it was like 64%. So we're going to get a new battery for that computer. It also tells you, once you unplug it, it'll tell you, you know, you're going to have 7 hours of internet browsing.
Is it pretty
6 hours of music? Yeah, it's pretty accurate. So
than the Apple kind of generic, this is how much time that's left.
Yeah, and it's a nicer setup, and it's more convenient. And the generic one, I mean, it's free. It's not like I'm paying $3 or $4 or $5 for it.
Right.
So anyway, I think it's worth having on your computer.
Very nice. Battery Health from FipFap or something.
Yep.
FipLab Limited. That's cool. My battery is at 98%. It's very healthy. Actually, it's interesting.
How is yours so healthy?
Because this
ours
is a couple
about
years
the same
old.
Age too. Mine's 2.2. Yours is 2.2. We got them within. a month of each other. Oh, you know why? Because you have 135 cycles and I have 578 cycles.
I keep mine plugged in. See?
I travel a lot.
So originally this this was 8460 milliamp hours. It's down to 7901, which is 93%. But that's partly because I haven't 135 cycles in 2 years. See? It's kept plugged in. That's useful. Mm-hmm. I like it. Renee Ritchie, what do you got for us?
So we just had the birthday for my eldest godson. He just turned 9, and he asked for some Hue lights because, like me, they have the Hue light system at his house. But his parents weren't first eager to have him control their lights, and also they restrict how much time he can spend using his iPod Touch. He gets to use it just for a few minutes every day, and most of that is for schoolwork and things like that.
What are they?
They don't want to watch TV either, you know. Yeah, I mean, they're raising that kid. And so what they did is they got in the Hue Tap, which came out a little while ago, but it's basically a remote control for your Hue lights. It's designed so that if someone's busy with their phone or tablet, or if you've run out of batteries, you can still control the lights in your house. And it's a big circle. It looks like a big button, and it's got three small buttons on it. And what you can do is set up a different theme or something for every one of those buttons. So one can be off, one could be pure white light, one could be red, one could be blue. You can set that up using your phone or your tablet, whatever you use to normally control your hues.
That's neat.
Then when you hit this, it's really neat. When you hit this, it changes the scene. There's no batteries. It's powered by kinetic energy, so you don't have to worry about charging it or plugging it in or putting new batteries in it.
A remote really control for your light color.
For him, I mean, they set it up so that he has this in his room and he can hit the buttons and change the lights between, you know, all the different presets. And when he does have time with his iPod Touch, he can change the presets, you know, to make them different, add some variety to it. But it means that he can still have really cool lighting in his room that he can control and without having, you know, constant access to a computer.
I just got the Hue Lux bulbs, which are white bulbs.
How'd you like them?
Well, they're white. I don't understand. Yeah. Wouldn't you want the color?
I want the color.
Yeah.
So I have a ton. I have, I think, 15 of these in my place now.
Oh!
And I have them behind me. Like, all the light behind me is...
I only have 9.
They're great. I mean, you could, like I said, you can watch Star Wars while the lights are set to Tatooine sunrise. I mean, it's great.
Did you see the Netflix hack?
I did not.
So Netflix has a yearly hack day, and this was one of the hacks. It was to hack the Hue to match the Netflix movie that you're watching.
That's awesome.
Can you see? You can't see my screen. Is that what's going on? Oh, there you go. Okay. So as you're watching a movie, the lights will match the background of the movie. Now, unfortunately, this is not available unless you work at Netflix.
I've been thinking about this because I was thinking about this, whether this was an if this then that type of thing that you could do.
The problem is you need to get the data from Netflix of what color. There was a TV where they did this.
After 3.5 hours is the problem.
Well, there was a TV that did this. They had lights in the back. I can't remember who made it. And the idea was you're focused on the screen, but it's as if the room is kind of part of the movie a little bit.
Well, they had that Xbox thing too, right?
The Illuma Room. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
I think it can be done though. I think it can be done outside of Netflix. We'll work on that. I think I can do it with actually Conduit, because I think what you do is you take the output that's going to the computer and you send it into Conduit, and then we blur it so that we get the overall hue, and then we use that, sample that, and then send that out over
The key
it's like
is
Tony
to,
Stark saying it's simple, right?
Yeah, right. The key is to get the color. It would only work if you're watching on a computer, not on a TV.
No, because what you do is you take the output and you send it to the TV and to the computer. So then you send it to both of them, but you do the processing on the... but you'd have to get something that will defeat the copyright, which they have hardware that will solve that problem.
Chat room says that would be fun for about a minute.
I don't know. just think of like action film and the whole room is going.
Well, that's the example Netflix gave. Like you're Tom Cruise, you're on a boat and it's sunset. So the room is that color and then you dive into the water and suddenly it's dark blue because you're in the water.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
But that's the problem. So you're not in the water. You're in a living room that has like lamps and books and unopened Amazon.com boxes and they're blue.
It's like when
I don't know. I think
I could never have a holodeck. These are the things that break my heart.
I see that Andy Nako has his Burger King hat at the ready with the Canadian flag on it. That's nice, Andy. What is your pick?
Actually, I have one pick and one selfish pick. You know how like you go on to iTunes or Amazon MP3 and because you want to buy the Gene Wilder singing Pure Imagination from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And of course, the only track off the soundtrack you cannot buy individually is the one track that everybody wants. So once I ran into this and I tweeted that, you know, if Apple and Amazon were good sports about this, they or really honest, they would make, instead of saying album only, they would just actually have an image of a middle finger, because that's how you feel when that happens. And of course, a few short months later, Jack Amaratis tweeted saying, okay, that sounded like a good idea. So I actually wrote that as a Chrome extension. So if you install this Chrome extension, any web page that has album only in text will be replaced by a graphic of a middle finger being extended to make you feel just as unloved by the commercial music industry as you actually are. This I love this because this is exactly the sort of thing that would win Mac Hack if they were still doing Mac Hack.
Not at Apple, I don't think. Oh, that's hysterical. Wait for that emoji.
But I also wanted to. I'm doing a little experiment. I hate doing YouTube videos because I don't know how to do them very well, and I get too obsessed with editing them. And oh, I need to add this effect here, and I need to get this shot right here. And I realized that, well, you know, you haven't really done a real video since the Kindle One got released. Perhaps you should try it again just to make sure you really do hate it, as opposed to you just are not doing it because you're afraid to learn how to do this. So I issued myself a challenge to do videos Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for an entire month. The first one was posted yesterday. The next one, I actually shot the video for it this morning, and we'll have to edit it tonight. So I'm only promising 12 of these. And the other thing I'm promising is that I call it the very least I can do, because I'm telling myself that if I do the very least I can possibly do to say that I posted a video when I said I would, that counts. So the idea is not to, at the end of 12, to learn how to do video as well as Twit does video, but to figure out a way to, even if it involves, you know, talking like this into my phone and talking for only 2 minutes and then posting it straight from my phone, being comfortable and happy with video or saying goodbye to this form of communication forever. So
what will the content be of the very least you can do?
It's a different topic every time. It's going to be mostly tech stuff. The one I recorded this morning is just all about, in broad strokes, here's how to pick your next camera, going through the different types of cameras that there are. Not specific models, but here's why maybe if you are happy with your phone, you should aim above your phone. Or if you think that you should be spending $2,500 on a Canon Mark III, 5D Mark III, maybe that's overkill for what you want. Just stuff like that. I start every one of these ideally to just have an idea of what I want to say. And then, as you saw a little bit there, instead of editing in, oh, I should have said this, or I forgot to say that, I will just put a little caption up here to fill in what I should have said. Yeah. The idea is to make it as painless as possible so I will actually be able to do 12 of these without saying, oh, man, do I really have 12 hours to paint the room green and make a little animated elf that hops on my shoulder? I don't want to do that.
But before the end, I'm gonna invite Andy down to Pittsburgh, which is a short flight now, and then maybe we'll do one down there.
You're a vlogger.
It's yeah. I mean, I want to. I feel the first video explains the whole all my thoughts on this. But to make it very, very quick, I feel as though there are what I love about the modern landscape is that there are people that are not terribly interested in sitting down and reading 1,000 to 2,000 words on a web page, which is how I like to express myself when I share my point of view. There are people who like to simply watch a 5-minute video or 10-minute video or even a 2-minute video. And I feel as though I'm leaving those people on the curb. If they're interested in what I have to say, they don't get to see that sort of stuff. So as a banker, or as a business person, you don't like to leave money on the table. And if you're in the business of communicating with people, you don't like to leave a part of an audience on the table, especially if the only reason why you're not doing it is because I don't want to do video. So
I feel like I should be doing this too.
But you should do video, Leo.
Oh, yeah.
I give you a list of hardware that I recommend. Oh, wait, no. You are actually in a working production TV studio.
That's actually what stops me from doing anything more personal. It's like, well.
Yeah, I think I have a problem with it. I start doing it and.
Get one of those selfie cam handles and you can walk
I do.
Around.
I have a stick that you could put your phone on and.
I will say that this. I don't intend to make this like a personal video blog. I do. It's mostly going to be tech stuff. I do have a broad outline of what I wanted to do with these 12 shows, and one of them is that I want to shoot video of me trying to take pictures of squirrels with a test camera that I'm working on right now, because I think that would make me look really dumb, but people would enjoy seeing it. But it's not going to be, you know, me with the Edward R. Murrow lighting and the cigarette going and saying,
"This is Paris.
It seems as though dawn is coming a lot colder and earlier these days. Now that the
that
political wind is blowing out all the heat.
Can you
and
make
light.
It black and white? I want that." So Instagram introduced a new app today, a free app called Hyperlapse. It's actually pretty cool. It is iOS only. They say we can't really do it on Android because they'd have to modify how the accelerometer works. Mm. The idea is it allows you to do time lapses, but it will automatically smooth the video. Here's their example of video at their Instagram blog. And I think it's really cool. If you look at the before and after, they've really got a quite an interesting technology. Microsoft showed something like this a few weeks ago from the Microsoft lab. And everybody said, "Oh, that's neat. Must take a lot of processing power." Well, no, you could do it on an iPhone. Be even better on the new iPhone, I imagine, with a new processor. So
that Microsoft made a research paper, Instagram made an app.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Right. Oh, we could do that. So I made a hyperlapse. I recorded this show. And it took, by the way, I should point out, rendering it took some time. So let me go to – I could share this, but I won't – before I share it, let me – it's a little bit obscure. I guess I've put it in my camera, in my gallery, I guess. I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, there it is. So this is my hyperlapse. okay, and true to form, I've recorded it sideways just to irk all of you. Because I'm of the opinion that the new...
It won't look so bad. Can you flip your iPad to be long ways? There you go. It was intentional.
It was in purpose.
It's new media, old man. Get with it. I'm talking about the person who's complaining about
this. This doesn't really show it off because the thing wasn't moving.
Right. I think the power is the stabilization.
The real power is walking down the road. But anyway, you can do a time lapse. It was very easily. It is only iOS. And it is... And yes, you should record vertically. Dang it.
You're really pushing that now.
If it was good enough for 2001 A Space Odyssey's computers.
That's right.
Who are you to judge anybody?
That's right.
Oh, I suppose Stanley Kubrick was wrong about that, and he's just one of the smartest people who ever held a camera.
So let's do a new hyperlapse. Here, I'll just jiggle it a lot, okay? There isn't much light here. Find a brighter spot. This is studio lighting hyperlapse. What the hell you want?
Get your shots together.
I'm moving around.
You gotta have someone walk through the studio, Leo.
Listeners, be ready to capture this as an animated GIF.
I will. I will do a walk through the studio, and I will post it after the show. How about that?
That's good.
And so here's my hyperlapse. Now,
you gave it a bit of a challenge.
I can slow it down. I can slow it down. I can speed it up. Let's go all the way. Whoa!
Fear and Loathing in Petaluma.
Okay. Now, if I press the checkbox, now it's going to render it. Now watch the new improved hyperlapse. I don't know how to get...
I don't know what it's going to do.
I don't know how to get to it. That's my problem here. The app leaves a little bit to be desired, frankly. I don't know. Do I have to go to my
library?
It's for the kids.
It's for the
kids.
Lost Tim Van Damme.
So here is this slowed down... That sucks. Okay, that's hyperlapse.
Leo broke the laws of time and space.
It's worth the price.
What I do think is interesting is there's a hyperlapse by somebody else, and then there's a hyperlapse by Instagram. I wonder
if it's the same. There's many hyperlapses. Get the hyperlapse by Instagram.
Right.
It's just a name collision. A popular thing on the App Store, I find. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this fine program. I thank you, my friends, for joining us. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, and don't forget the debug podcast at iMore.com/debug. Must listen to. You have a number of other podcasts. You really did.
I actually reduced the amount.
Oh, good.
So we merged the TV show and Review into one show called Review, and we merged Zen and Tech and Vector into one show called Vector and made it a panel show. So now it's me, Georgia Dow, Guy English, and Dave Wiskus talking about stuff every week instead of
excellent
previous format.
Excellent. Did you redesign iMore? It looks like you did.
We're doing it. So we used to do big redesigns, but it took so long. We're now doing it step by step. So we've got a new header up there. Yeah, and if you go into one of the articles, we've got a new comment system as well. So there'll be other stuff coming, but it's easier to deploy small bits at a time, we discovered.
Yes. And cheaper.
It keeps your sanity. Like, you pay less price in terms of sanity this way.
Yeah. We're doing a redesign on Twit, which won't debut till early next year. But we're doing something kind of different with it. We're doing a headless design, which will allow us in future to modify the site much more easily. So we're doing a back end that's Drupal and has an API.
Right.
The thinking being that we could have the website call the API, but also apps call the API. Mm-hmm. And that with simple changes in Drupal, when we publish a show, it could be propagated to all the different forms.
That's what we do. It works really well.
Do you do that way? Yeah, and then we're going
to
do
we have an API that comes out and goes to our app as well as to the Drupal front end.
And then the front end will be probably Node.js or something more modern than Drupal, so we can keep it. And the thing is, the web changes like every 4 months. The standard, what everybody, like Quartz just did their fourth redesign in like 2 years. It's because the standards are always, are moving target. And so I think this is probably the better way to do it.
Yeah. And you don't want to keep up because then no one knows how to use your site. It's always good to be something people are familiar with.
Yeah. Mr. Alex Lindsay, fresh from Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Perhaps going to Italy. We don't know. Maybe tomorrow.
But yeah. And by the way, September 10th, we didn't plan this, but September 10th is going to be the next Final Cut Pro user group, our virtual user group. So we'll put that up by next week so people can sign up and get it. But we're going to do it in the afternoon, so 1 p.m., as opposed to our previous 6 p.m., and that is mostly because we had a lot of complaints from Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to see. Like middle of the night. So if you're in Europe and you go, if we see a big stat that a lot of people are watching in Europe, we'll keep it in the afternoon. If like four of you watch from Europe after complaining, then we'll go back to 6 p.m. So I'm throwing down the gauntlet. It's September 10th, 1 p.m.
And where should people go to find out?
We'll post it. Just follow me on Twitter. But otherwise, it'll be on YouTube. It'll be on the YouTube channel. That's the best way. Pixel Core YouTube channel. Subscribe to that and you'll see it pop up. It's going to be streaming live there. And then also we'll have it on Hazu because we'll be doing the question and answer stuff that we're doing a big upgrade on right now.
Yes, we didn't use it today because it's trying
not to distract Andy because there's a lot of big upgrades that we're doing right now, and so I'm just trying to keep from having to worry about anything until we finish the big push. So
that's Andy Inako over there. He's from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hello.
With his little Lego family behind him. Is that the village people?
It's village people. Hello. That's Lego Queen, man.
Queen. I see Freddie Mercury and the gang.
That's fine. No, it's fine.
Lego Queen.
We're not expecting seeing them in Lego form, so you are to be forgiven. I think that the base figure in that one is a Lego Luke Skywalker, but it still works.
He does seem to be wearing a dirndl of some kind.
Are those the original arms?
I think this whole thing is CG, but
yeah,
a good idea.
Lego Queen,
yeah, a little.
Yes.
Now I've seen everything,
even in Lego form. Freddie Mercury has an incredible four octave range.
We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC, every Tuesday. I hope you'll tune in live and join us, as many in the chat room have, including Tali, who sent us his. His video from Hyperlapse, he says he shot it during a lunch hour of a traffic light in Decatur. Here you go. How exciting is that? Thank you, Tali. If you can't watch live, and you see what you miss if you don't watch live, traffic hour in Decatur, you can also get on-demand of audio and video. We put that up on the website, twit.tv/mbw, and also wherever you can find finer netcasts, including iTunes, of course. And our fine apps, all created by third-party developers who do such a nice job for us. Thank you. I'm Leo Laporte. Now, back to work, because break time is over. Wow.